Hello and welcome to the On Call Room,
a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree.
And it's a beautiful day to podcast. Welcome back to our deep diving Grey's Anatomy podcast. We're in season 19, episodes 5 and 6. So if you've not seen up to that, actually, if you've not seen the entirety of season 19, I highly recommend that you go back and watch that first, because we are a spoilers podcast and we will spoil many things for you. So go do that. It's on Netflix. It's there. You can watch it for free. Bree, do you want to talk about ways to support the podcast so we can continue to put out weekly episodes?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you love listening to us and you want to support us, you can visit Patreon at www.patreon.com/theoncallroom. It's in our show notes. And there you can pledge to be an intern, a resident, or an attending. And by doing that, you get different gifts. We never know what to say. You get different things. So you get the episode a day early. You can hang out with us on a Zoom hangout call. You get bonus episodes, which is really exciting. I'm going to give a little heads up. Should I give a heads up about what our bonus episode is going to be? I think we should.
Absolutely.
Our bonus episode is a crossover event with one of our best listeners and a dear friend of ours who has their own podcast, Beach Houses and Babies. It's a private practice recap podcast. So it was the last crossover event between Private Practice and Grey's Anatomy, and we recorded an episode. So that will be our bonus episode this month. You should listen to it. Yeah.
Yep. It's it'll be two parts. So this will be part one that you will get. Just letting you know that. And also, please leave us a review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen. It is how people find the podcast. We really appreciate it a lot. Also, it's about that time of year coming up soon where we send out our yearly mailing, which is like our entry level thank you to our patrons. It's kind of like a holiday card. And we should take that photo soon before, like, because what if I, like, have a baby?
Well, then I just don't know. I guess in the photo, and we
does the baby go in the photo?
And then we put, like, a picture of Derek Shepherd on top of your baby's face.
And yeah. Then,
yeah.
That's a good idea. So we do that. So become a patron before the holidays. That's a fun one. We've been doing that. It's like our sixth year, maybe, that we've done that.
Yeah. So we'll make sure we always send out a little thing, and you have to go in there and put your address in, but there will be a cutoff, and it's usually towards the middle of November that there's a cutoff. So look for that.
Yep. Today's post-op topic, which is a benefit for our $10 patrons, is also, we're going to talk a little bit more about Catherine being back on the show in this episode, and Tom Karasik as well, and her storyline. So if you would like to hear more about that, please make sure you are listening on the Patreon app, or you can put that RSS feed. I have to figure out, I know you can do it with Spotify now too. You can like get your Patreon feed on your Spotify. I have not looked into it yet, but I do know it's something you can do. I'm sure a quick Google would give you the answer, but those are posted like specially on the Patreon app. So you have to be listening there to get that.
Yes.
I don't want to ask how you are because you're not feeling well and I'm not feeling well.
Yeah, it's okay. I have a minor cold, everyone. It's not COVID. It's just a cold, and I'm trying to just like glide through it because we're going to a Notre Dame game tomorrow. You are coming as well, and it's going to be really fun, and we're going to tailgate, and we're going to root for Notre Dame. I don't really care, but my husband loves the team, so I really hope that they win. And
I know. I'd really like to see John happy.
I know. I don't want to see him sad. I think it's going to be a good game. He was like, we're tailgating. He was like, we can bring our flag and like zip tie it up. And I was like, cool, man. Yeah, I'm all about it. I tried to find like Notre Dame, like paper plates and like things like that, but I waited too long and they were not on Amazon Prime. So I just have football themed stuff, which I think is really fun. You know,
I think that's great.
Yeah. I thought it was fun. The
theme is sports.
Yeah. We're just having a good old sports time. But yeah, so cold, it's okay. But you went to New York. Do you want to like tell the listeners about that?
I did. And I think some listeners saw on my Instagram and were like, I can't wait to hear about. I wish I was in a more like, okay, so you know how like you go on a vacation, but then the day after is like actually terrible because you're like trying to catch up on life and like you're tired like it's just so I'm in the day after The trip was great. Also, New York will beat the shit out of you. It's not a relaxing trip. It robs you of your money. And my mom and I were like, because I'm in my third trimester, we were like, okay, I really can't walk that much. Like, usually we walk like so many steps and we're like, we got to be more conscious and like pick what we're going to do and try not to like see everything because it's just, I don't have the capacity. Well, we tried that and yet we still walked like an average of 12,000 steps a day.
That's a lot.
Which I texted my friends who live there, like they average 10,000 steps a day. And maybe if you are like have a job that isn't sedentary, you also like 10,000 is no big deal. My average is like 3,500 a day, at least that like when with me holding my phone. So maybe it's more, I don't have my phone on me at all times, but I do not average 10,000 a day, especially not now. And I've just been having some pelvic pain. And so I felt like it was the perfect amount of time because by the last day I was like, I have no money and my entire body hurts. But it was really lovely. I went with my mom. We saw three shows. We saw, we went because I had tickets to see Merrily We Roll Along with Daniel Radcliffe, Lindsay Mendez, and Jonathan Groff. And it was so, I mean, it's a very depressing show, but it was really well done. It was so great. We saw, and then we wanted to see two more shows. We didn't have tickets. We got really cheap, like, not lottery, but like rush tickets. My mom had never seen Cursed Child. Oh. I've seen it too many times. But I wanted to make sure that she saw it because she likes Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So we went and saw that. I have feelings about it. It was fine, but it was good. Oh, it was a play matinee. Oh, well, I just mean it's like I've seen it too much, you know, like it. And also it used to be two plays and now it's one and it's just really long. Mm. Like at least when it was two, for some reason, it felt not as long. I don't know. It was just. It's kind of like when I saw Dear Evan Hansen too many times. At some point, you're like, I got to stop going to this. It's not going to ever be like it was the first time, you know?
Sure, sure.
But it was great. And tickets were super cheap, which is why I felt great about it. It was a matinee. And then we went and saw Sweeney Todd. And I didn't think I was going to see Josh Groban because I got an email saying he wasn't going to be in it. And I'm not even a Josh Groban fan, but just like the idea of him, I was like, I would like to see him perform. But then he was in it. So the female lead who is the Tony nominee, Annalee Ashford, wasn't, but the understudy was great. I literally saw Josh Groban. People were so hype in the theater for him. It was just a fun atmosphere. I didn't realize how many people love Josh Groban.
Oh, yeah. I mean, haven't you seen the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episodes about Josh Groban?
No, oh, I should watch God. These immediately.
Like, Dee loves Josh Groban. It's really funny.
Wait, that's peak comedy. Like, that's such a niche, like, thing.
Yeah, you should go today. You should go find those episodes because I think it's maybe one or two, but they're very, very funny about Josh Groban.
That's great. Yeah, and that between the tale of Sweeney Todd, which I made my mom watch that Office intro first, you know, like when Andy comes in.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they're performing that. I made her watch that. And so the whole opening song, we were like giggling because I can never not think of that. Like when I watch this show, and between that and the Merrily We Roll Along soundtrack or score, I have those songs stuck in my head. They're like earworms. They live there now.
I love in the Office when like they do the whole song and then Michael Scott is like,
what part did I get?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I know. That part is so good.
Oh, poor Michael Scott.
And they
dude,
just get silent.
Yeah, I know. This was like a long time ago, but I still love The Office. It always gets me giggling, you know?
Today on my TikTok, when I was scrolling this morning aimlessly, avoiding getting up, I got served this scene that's so emotional. It's when Pam has her art show and like Oscar's boyfriend is like not saying nice things and no one likes her art. And then Michael comes and he's like, that's our office. That's my car. And he's like, can I buy that? Like how much? And she hugs him. And I was like, this is an emotional show.
It is a really emotional show. The relationship between Michael and Pam and like how it grows. And then when they leave, I can't talk about it. When he leaves and she like whispers.
I know. He's such an unserious character that when he is sincere, like in that art show moment, you know, when he says, I'm really proud of you. I like completely lose my everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Great show. You know what? It was, it's a really good show. And so was Josh Groban. Josh Groban was really great too.
It was just, it was great. It was an experience. It was great. It was really cool to see Daniel Radcliffe and Jonathan Groff in the flesh, like real life. And it's also Broadway Cares season, which is when they like raise money for the Broadway Cares nonprofit, which like helps pays actors during like the strike, for example, or helps cover healthcare costs, all these things. They like talk after the show, like to raise money, like they tell you about it. And at this one, they were like raffling off some, like, for example, when I went to see Into the Woods, they had signed playbills, a couple of them, and I think they were like $80. And I got one for our friend, actually. But these ones, like the signed playbills for It Merrily We Roll Along, were like $400 but they raffled off this like piece of paper that they type on during the show and ended up I was so nervous that like no one was gonna offer a lot. You know what I mean? Like I was just, but they were like talking and made some very funny jokes and then they sold it for $1,600.
Oh my God. Who has money like that to be like $1,600 for like a piece of paper?
It was funny. Daniel Radcliffe was like, I know that a lot of you probably stretch yourselves thin to go to this show. And for that, we are so thankful. But I am also sure there are some of you who like are very rich. And for that, we're going to try to raffle some money. And it's true. I mean, I bet those front row tickets were so expensive. So it's like if you are dropping that on a ticket, you might have extra. Also, it's going to a good cause. But yeah, it was. And then the person that won, I think their name was Christina. And it was very funny because she like yelled to him like, because he was like, how do you spell your name? And she like said it and he said it wrong at first. And she was like, you better spell it right. And I was like, yeah, girl, can you imagine if you paid $1,600 for like a personalized letter and then they spelled your name wrong? I'd be so sad.
Yeah, that'd be really silly.
But it was wild to see like, you know, Harry Potter in the flesh.
In the flesh, right in front of you.
I know. He's very short.
And now you're done, right? Like that was the last thing. Now
thank
you nest.
God, that was the last airplane, the last bit of travel. I don't even know if I'm gonna make it to Wisconsin like for the Christmas time. I'm done. I'm ready to catch up on work, nest. My shower is next weekend, so I think I'm gonna be bombarded with like things that I need, but like I'm a little nervous and overwhelmed. According to my app, there are 9 weeks until this baby comes. It could be less. It could be more. I don't know. I was born at 32 weeks, which is very early. So I definitely don't want that to happen. But like people have babies early and I am not ready.
Yeah. Well, we'll help you get ready.
I know. I need to be locked in the nursery and like sort things.
We'll help you unpack things.
I know. I don't know how to hang things on the wall. It seems like such a big commitment.
I don't really know how to do that either. So I'm going to like pass that off to someone else. You know what happened in my downstairs living room. It looks like there's bullet holes and we still have not fixed it because my sister and I tried to hang a shelf and 3 years later,
it's just too hard to commit.
It was just like things weren't going well and whatever. So we just try and hang artwork over it now. So I don't think you want me.
Understand.
I don't think you want me helping you with that, but I can fold clothes or I can, I don't know, do other things, open packages.
I just
take out recycling.
Well, and then it's what's stressful is they're like, you know, don't open things because you might not need it and then you can return it. And I'm like, well, how do I return something I didn't buy? I don't know how this works. I don't know how having a baby works. I know literally nothing. Listeners, if we continue, I don't know what will happen after the baby's born in terms of the podcast of like timing things.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will be back and talking, but like, I don't know anything. So you're going to be witnessing the most like blind leading the blind into like, I just don't know. Everything's going to be wild.
I have a feeling that it will just all unfold as it should and you will figure things out. And the things you don't figure out, you'll call your mom and you'll say, Mom, I don't know what I'm doing. And she'll come over and help you.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, thanks for listening to all of that. Are we going to finish the season? Yeah, we will finish the season before I have this child. We must.
Yeah, I think like because I think this will go into like beginning of December if we're. I think that's how we planned it out. I don't know.
Wow. 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 Wow.
Yeah. So
also the last thing I'll say is I was just at Costco and the holiday section is popping. I was so tempted to spend money I don't have.
Oh yeah.
On this, like, you would love it. I bet you even have it. It's like the white ceramic like it looks like a little city.
Oh, we just bought that for my mom for her birthday.
Oh, I want it. It's beautiful. It's, that's like my, yeah. I love that style of holiday decorating and I don't have a city.
Yeah.
And I almost bought it and I said, Abby, don't. But I did buy gift tags for, because they were only $12 and they're beautiful. And I was like, I don't want to spend this, but I know what's going to happen is I'll wrap gifts or mid-December and then spend like $30 on crappy ones.
No, good. I'm happy you did that. I got Christmas cards from there.
Oh, I saw those.
They were really cute. And then, I mean, I always have to like supplement more because isn't that crazy? There were 40 Christmas cards and I was like, that's not enough. I think we send 70 Christmas cards, maybe more.
Yeah, you're really good about that. That's such an investment.
I just love doing. I mean, my whole December and like even November is like, it is completely booked already because part of it too is my mom broke her shoulder. So like I'm helping set up for Thanksgiving and then I'm helping like my mom put up her Christmas decorations. And so like I'm like doubling what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so I like texted John's sister the other day and I said, hey, like, and it's October, right? It's middle of October. And I'm like, hey, yeah. Do you have suggestions for the girls, our nieces, for Christmas? And she said, oh, getting started early. And I was like, absolutely not. It is October and it is time to like get into holiday mode. Like I have so much to do. Like I have to do it starting in October. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Are you feeling like if I were you right now, because your house is so spooky decorated and like in an incredible way, do you start to get antsy when it's about to shift that like I got to get these decorations down to switch to the next one? Or are you still like fully enjoying the October Halloween decor?
No, it's interesting. I just started feeling antsy like yesterday. Like I was looking around.
But you can't take it down till Halloween.
Till Halloween. I was looking around and I was like, why do we still have this shit up? Like, and then because I've been to like Home Goods and stuff and like all their Christmas stuff is out. And I'm like thinking about like my mom. Oh my God, my mom bought me. Did I talk about this on the podcast about getting a second tree upstairs?
You might have, but I don't know if we'd talked since you actually have it.
Okay, so it doesn't really matter, but like John did not want me to get a second tree upstairs. He was like, too much money at this time in our lives. And I was like, no, it's a good idea. So anyway, I went to my mother's to help out over there. And I was telling her this story and I sent her the Christmas tree that I wanted to order for my like upstairs landing. And she ordered it and sent it to me for a graduation gift. So now I won. I got the Christmas tree.
I won.
And John didn't have to like buy it. So anyway, right. I always find a way. I will always find a way with Christmas decorations. And I'm very excited too. It's sitting in our entryway right now, the boxes.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
I'm like going to develop like a kind of like a theme on this tree, you know, like it's going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know what. Yeah. But I think it's going to be like kind of like, I don't know, like whites and like Scandinavian stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that's the vibe I'm going for.
I could use a second tree because we can't even put all of our ornaments on.
I know.
And we don't have any like matching ornaments. Like I know you have some that are like, you know, like, I don't know if they're like balls or whatever, but they're like a set kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like mine are all wacky ass ornaments and I don't have room for them. We have to pick and choose because there's not even room. Now that I have a dog crate, I don't even know where I'm going to put my Christmas tree.
Yeah, that you're going to have to figure that out. And I do know that you can't fit all of your ornaments on a tree. And I remember that every year because every year I find an ornament that I'm like, oh, this like reminds me of Abby. And every year I don't get it
for you
because I'm like, she has too many ornaments and this isn't actually a thoughtful gift.
Could. You could though, because some of them are like, they were like my, when I was 2 years old ornament and I'm going to have my own baby that's going to get their own ornaments.
Yeah.
So I feel like Jake and I's like baby ornaments need to not go on the tree anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like we are 34 years old.
Yeah.
Like my first Christmas does not need to go on the tree.
Well, that's funny because like those ornaments, I have my set. Like I have these little angels that like I got an ornament every year. Yes. They're like Hallmark classic, right? But like any of the like my first Christmas or like
Your mom has.
Yeah, my mom has all those still on her tree. Like,
I know my mom's probably listening to this. Mom, why did you give those away? Do you not care about me?
Clearly not. Or she just wanted a different aesthetic for her tree.
She has our craft ornaments on her tree, like any like school, you know, like noodles, spray painted noodle. Yeah. Like those are all on her tree. I guess the ones I have are quite ugly. Like the late 80s, early 90s of the like my first Christmas. What a certain aesthetic those were, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you're right. Maybe.
But I would, if you see an ornament that speaks to you about me, I would love it.
Okay, all right. That's good to know because it's like every year I'm like, oh my God, that reminds me of Abby or that's fun. And every year I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do that because I know she has a lot.
No, you know what? My random one of Winnie the Pooh doesn't need to go on the tree.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
So, anyways, we should probably jump into this episode. We're going to cruise through it. I know it seems like a lot happened, but it also didn't.
Yeah. Before we do, let's take a quick break.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
All right. We are going to talk today about season 19, episode 5 and 6, When I Get to the Border and Thunderstruck. I will read the first monologue. Excuse any throat clearing. I'm just trying to survive over here. So when researchers studied the way surgeons make decisions in the OR, they found newer surgeons tend to rely on the standard operating procedures they learned in school. It makes sense. Newer surgeons have limited experience to fall back on, but seasoned surgeons are more intuitive. They mine from years of practice to make quick and effective decisions. The more experience we have, the less likely we are to be thrown when we encounter complications. We can shift gears more easily when it's needed. With enough practice, surgeons learn how and when to pivot from standard operating procedures. Experience gives us more context to know when we need a different approach. It gives us more options to help our patients. One-size-fits-all solutions don't always work. Every patient is different, just like every person is different. We each have various factors to consider when facing life's big decisions. So we gather the facts, we analyze the options, and we use our knowledge and experience to make the choices that are right for us. Meredith Gray.
The human body is full of energy. Sprinting at full speed, it produces enough wattage to power anything in your house. Your cells are built to move changed ions through the cellular membrane. And the nervous system is a highway of electrical signals zapping through your muscles and brain. Your body runs on positive and negative charges, all obeying a basic law of physics: opposites attract. There's lightning in everyone, opposite charges finding each other. They connect, they spark, and as long as they do, your life goes on. Your cells keep multiplying, your brain keeps thinking, your body wants to move, so it moves because it can. Life is electricity, positive and negative, creation and destruction. Destruction sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, but we're all storms inside. Meredith Gray.
Shotgun workup, we have Susan Miles, ruptured ectopic pregnancy.
Catherine Fox, chondrosarcoma.
Jonathan Bright, femoral fracture, unilateral fracture at C3, compression fracture at T5, epidural hematoma, third degree burns, bilateral pneumothorax, and tension pneumothorax.
Wow, nice job. Tessa Hobbs has chronic pancreatitis and pseudoaneurysm.
Heather Smith, burns.
Logan Smith, burns.
Paige Smith, perforated eardrum.
Round. We're going to talk about this in post-op, but Catherine's cancer is back and only Tom Krasick knows. He's pushing her to do treatments, but for the time being, she wants it to remain a secret while she pursues other treatment forms.
Meredith visits schools for Zola in Boston, and Jackson pushes her to move to Boston to do research on curing Alzheimer's. Zola has a successful day at the new school, and Meredith tells Jackson that they are in and will move to Boston.
Bailey and Addison take their medical clinic on the road and transfer a patient with an ectopic pregnancy across state lines, but she begins hemorrhaging as the pregnancy ruptures. Before an ambulance can get to them, she passes away. This is heartbreaking, and Addison believes it could have been preventable if her normal doctor wouldn't have been afraid of treating her for fear of going against the law. Back in Seattle, Bailey suggests that Addison take Ben's mobile operating room vehicle as her own to care for patients who are unable to get the reproductive care that they need.
There is a storm in Seattle and many intense patients come through Grace Sloan Memorial. At the same time, Maggie and Winston are babysitting Meredith's kids at Mare's house when lightning strikes and starts a fire. Meredith gets called out of surgery and rushes home to find her children are safe, but her house is on fire. The Station 19 crew is there fighting the fire, and the only thing that Maggie and Winston were able to grab was Derek's Post-it.
Before lightning struck the house, Maggie and Winston were arguing about Winston's departure from cardio to save their marriage. Winston tells her that she is his passion and he doesn't mind leaving his area of study in order to save their marriage. She tells him that she doesn't respect that choice.
Meredith emails her notice to her colleagues, who all handle it differently, and it appears that her and Nick have not discussed her departure, and it causes them to fight while doing surgery and use the interns Simone and Lucas against each other while they argue. Nick is upset that Meredith didn't even ask him first what he thought of her moving.
Amelia forces Lucas to tell his intern friends that he is not, in fact, sleeping with Amelia, but that he is her nephew. He is upset by this because he hates being known by the Shepherd name. He struggles to do the right thing in surgery with Nick and Meredith and afterward yells about it to Simone and then makes out with her. Simone pulls away saying that she can't, but she doesn't say why. First notes.
First notes.
Mine is Zola and Meredith are both wearing blazers.
I love that. I didn't even notice that. Mine is just that they're in Boston and I can't believe how quickly we're already to this point in the show.
I know it did seem to go really fast this time around.
Yeah.
But I guess it did happen in, like, the first half of the season.
Right, because Mare's gone the second half of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of forgot that. Let's maybe talk about, I don't have much to say about this topic. It's interesting that Jackson is working at, what is it? What would you call it? The center?
Foundation?
Oh, yeah, the foundation. And I think we
Which is
all,
huge.
Yeah, it's massive. I also think that, like, I would have felt like, oh, my. I don't remember it being a big deal about seeing him again as it was as, like, when we saw April again. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I feel like he's not been gone that long. So I just, like, I didn't feel the excitement that I thought that I would. Also, like, it's not like he was in Seattle, which would maybe make me feel differently. I don't know. I just didn't feel, like, that excited about seeing him.
Yeah. It was also interesting that Meredith called him Uncle Jackson.
Yeah. That was weird. It's just the story. They're just trying to push it so quickly. Mare is talking to Jackson about, like, why Zola's upset and how she missed all of this. And she says she's been reading about Alzheimer's. And she says, if I can cure Alzheimer's, I can help Zola. And while I do think that that's, like, obviously an incredibly worthy thing to be, like, researching and studying, I also feel like that shouldn't be the only way that you're, like, trying to help your daughter. Like, I'm going to cure Alzheimer's. Not, like, that seems, like, so not doable, you know, like, to fully cure it in your lifetime. But it's interesting that that's what she ends up doing. Not curing, but, like, researching, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems like some type of, like, distorted belief that, like, if she can do that, like, she will make Zola's anxiety go away.
Right.
I do think it was interesting too, and, like, not to get too deep into it because it doesn't really matter that much, but, like, when Meredith starts naming all of Zola's trauma and was like and before that was like, she was my happy girl, like, I wasn't worried about her at all, and then names all of the trauma, I'm like, that's pretty naive.
Yeah. 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 Zola's had a hard life. I was glad that she mentioned, like, the fact that Zola is adopted and didn't, like, not include that portion of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Because I feel like that could have bothered me if she didn't do that. I get, though, that, like, someone who has anxiety about something, like, working on something, even though it might, well, for me, it's not helpful. It's like how I think that worrying is productive because it's,
yeah,
like,
it's not.
No, and I feel like her working on curing Alzheimer's is like, it will feel productive to her, but I don't know if it's like, that's not the way we should go about curing Zola's anxiety. I'm also not a doctor or a psychiatrist, but
just a heads up, everyone, I'm not.
It was just very interesting and very like convenient, I guess. I would have loved if she just has always been working on it since the Alzheimer trial with Derek, you know, like, because she, that was something that she used to do. Till she messed up the trial.
Yeah, I don't know. It is kind of frustrating. I do, I guess I like how they made that connection because she's a general surgeon, right? And then it's like, okay, all of a sudden you're doing like neuro research. But I do like how Jackson, at least the writers, brought in like, you did this Parkinson's trial. So like, it makes sense that you would do additional research. I'll give you the funding, whatever.
Yeah.
That was like a smart way to do that because you're right. Otherwise, it's like what you haven't been interested in this in a really long time. It's actually not really a part of the type of surgery that you're doing. But we also felt that way about the Parkinson's trial. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. They needed to find a way to get her out to Boston. Of there. And this is the way they did it. I mean, I think we should transition into. I mean, they wanted to find a way to get her out of there, but did they really have to burn her house down in order to do that?
It bold, felt like bold that should choice. Be such a more emotional scene, and it just wasn't. Like,
it
like,
wasn't, I really, right?
I mean, like, I think maybe commercial break-wise, there's that moment where, like, you don't know if her kids aren't okay yet. Like, she just, they find out that the house is on fire, but I forget who goes in and tells her and says, that's all I know, you know? And so there might have been like a cliffhanger moment.
I think that
moment.
Was Richard.
Yeah. Of like, oh my God, is she going to lose, you know, more than just her house? But, and the post-it moment was nice, but it really just didn't hit me how I think it should have. It feels more like they're just burning the thing I love, which was, you know, this show.
sure
like it's just why did her and it I think we end up learning it's not the whole house, it's just like the upstairs gets like messed
yeah,
up
it's
right
like, yeah it's like the attic or something and then they they fix it. Like it doesn't burn to the ground.
No, that'd be dramatic.
Yeah. So I mean, but that
it's also like
I
not
guess...
been teased. Like I think about a house fire on a show and in This Is Us, which granted, you know, you wait seasons to like know how that happened, but you know it did. Like that was a fire that I felt emotional about. This one, I feel nothing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and it's just part of the acting too, right? Like it's just like, I don't know, like playing like shock and like overwhelm. Like, I didn't get that from Meredith. You know, it was just like, it's just stuff. And it's like, okay, yeah. Like, we're very happy your family is okay. But, like, there didn't seem to be an essence.
Affected by it?
Yeah. It was just kind of like, and, like, when she was talking to the one character from Station 19, and they're like, I'm sorry, but, like, we just don't know yet. And she's like, thank you very much. I'm like, you wouldn't be that fucking calm in that moment.
No.
Like.
No.
I don't know. Whatever. Buy house. Buy
house. So they're moving to Boston. I almost wish that the Zola aspect of needing to find a different school had not been a part of it. And it's just that Meredith got this opportunity to research Alzheimer's. That almost like feels even more would be a cool opportunity than, you know, like, it's because of Zola. She's too smart. She needs to find a smart school. The only smart school happens to be in the same city the foundation is. You know, it's just, like, too convenient.
Right. I agree.
Bye, Mare. Don't miss you.
Do we want to talk about Bailey and Addison? It was a big part of the episode.
Yeah, it was. And I felt emotional during that one. If I had to pick a part where, like, Grace tugged at my...
I was shocked. I've seen this before. And, like, as she was saying all these things, that patient, I was like, oh, yeah, like, things are going to be okay. That she
oh,
dies.
You forgot that she... Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
Like, that's she says fucked all... up.
Yeah, she says all those things to Mare, or to Mare, I mean, to Addison about, like, with her kid. It's just... It's Very, very sad. I want to make sure that I'm fully understanding. So I understand, like, her doctor didn't want to give her, like, a DNC, I'm right. assuming, or the whatever, because he didn't want to be, like, she was in an area where it's illegal. And so at whatever point of pregnancy, I don't know. I guess I understand that, like, the doctor was too scared to do it because they didn't want to get in trouble with the law. So they are bringing her to Seattle.
Seattle, just somewhere that they were at this clinic, you know, because remember, they drove to some clinic. Right. So they were driving her across state lines. But then they got stuck in traffic. And something about that to me. And I guess they called again, like, Bailey, when they got her out of the call, they're like, I'm calling again about an ambulance. But something, like, while she was hemorrhaging and they were putting in a balloon and stuff, like, it didn't feel like they were panicking enough.
Yeah. Also, why, if you knew you had an ectopic pregnancy, why wouldn't an ambulance be the thing drive? I don't know. Like, I guess I just don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor. It just feels like when you find out you have those, it needs to be taken care of immediately. And this was like, we'll take you in a little car where we have no medical supplies. You know, yeah, like it just
zero medical supplies.
Right. It just felt a little wild.
And maybe it was because of the laws and stuff. So it was like,
right.
I don't know. But it's something about it felt weird that they were very risky taking this chance, just like being in this big old truck thing with.
Yeah, I did like the speech that Addison gives to, I mean, the poor paramedic guy is just trying to, like, do his job at that point. But when she yells and she says, like, lawmakers are the ones who should have to see this carnage. I think that was very, like, very true. It's just interesting how they are, like, showcasing this real world topic, you know?
Yeah. And then
also,
Addison,
ectopic pregnancies scare the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah.
So scary.
Well, yeah. Oh, and the part two, it was really sad when she was like that her daughter had started calling the baby Sunday or something like that. But then she was like, can I get pregnant again? And Addison being like, well, I don't, like, hopefully, but we'll need to do more scans or whatever. Like, it, and then how quickly that turned to her, she was dead. It was like, can I get pregnant again? To all of a sudden, like, this killed her.
Exactly.
So, fucked up, man. Really fucked up storyline. And then Addison, I mean, she is, like, ready to go out and help and put boots to the ground and change the world.
Yeah. And I'm glad they do bring Ben's little, like, mobile operating room that they spent all that money on and don't use, like, into play again. Because I do remember that being a thing. But I need, like, someone to explain to me step by step what's happening. Like, what is she doing with this operating vehicle? You know, like, is it an ice cream truck of reproductive, like, services? How is that legal? I have a lot of questions about it.
I don't know. And is she going to, like, Southern Illinois with it? Or, like...
Right. Is she going, like, to states where where they're not allowed to get these reproductive services? And how is that, again, how is that legal?
Well, like, I would imagine that would not be legal.
Right. Like, the clinic option, like, their plan with the clinic and just trying to make these services more readily available feels very, like, great. Great idea. Yeah. Let's open another clinic. The thing in the van, I don't understand.
I don't either. And do we get more? Or I can't remember if I missed the part. Does she get into it and drive? She drives away. Okay. Yeah. That was the part.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember. I was looking down at something. Yeah. But yeah, like, where is she going? And also, like, what about Henry, her child? Like, like, what about that? Like, because, you know, Bailey's like, I thought about it too, but, like, I have Prue or.
Right.
Rue?
Right.
Prue?
Yep. Prue.
Yeah. I have her. Like, I can't leave. Like, why? But where is Addison going? What is she doing? Whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll have to keep watching and see if maybe it ends up making more sense to us. Again, the clinic storyline and, like, what happens later down the line with Bailey and these few people protesting, that all is very, like, real and believable and, like, is happening all over the place. And so I guess it's
good. Also, part of me, though, too. Like, if I saw a big crowd of protests, I'd be like, let's park down the road.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd pull that big van in there. I'd just be like, let's just park down the road and like we can walk up and in. I don't know.
I've always wanted to volunteer. I have a friend that does it, that volunteers to be the escorts at Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
I think that's such a...
I've thought about doing that.
Like a great thing to offer to people. Anyways, I don't know if they've shown an ectopic pregnancy before also, which is like something that I feel like I didn't know.
No, they have.
About.
Christina had one.
Oh, yeah. Duh. Okay. You're right. You're right. Thank you for that. I still feel like even, but back in the day when we watched the Christina one, like live, I'm talking a long time ago, like didn't quite understand what that was. And it wasn't until like I was deciding whether or not to have kids and then like did get pregnant that like it becomes like a legitimate fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't realize that I think like it sometimes feels like before I was in that world, I didn't think of it as very common. And then once I entered that world, I realized it's actually very common and it's very dangerous. And it's like very scary that in some places they wouldn't help you with that, which is insane. So who knows? We'll figure it. It was very sad.
It was very sad.
And I don't know. Addison's back in that van, balling around.
Yeah. Changing lives.
Changing lives.
Okay. Like briefly, Maggie and Winston. Okay. Maggie, I disagree. And I disagreed the first time
yes.
I watched this. Like, what Same. Are you talking about, Maggie?
I was so offended for when, like, I felt so bad for Winston when she said the things she said. He said, I love cardio, but I love you more and I'm willing to give it up. And then she says, that is the opposite of what I want or what I would do. I would never give up my passion. He says, you are my passion. And she says, I guess I'm not sure that I respect that. Wow.
So like, mean.
Yeah. Like, I guess I understand maybe being like, you don't need to do that. Or like, you know, like we can figure this out kind of like an attitude. But to literally be like, oh, I don't respect that decision. And so therefore, I don't respect you. It's like the most hurt. Saying you don't respect someone is more hurtful than being like, I hate you. You know, like I feel like not having respect for the person that you are married to is so sad.
Yeah. And just like, also, like, I don't think it's fair to like decide that someone, what someone's like level of passion is for something. Like if he's like, yeah, I'm going to go do this other thing and I think it's going to be good enough. And like, as a doctor, I want to go in this program and it will be fine because like, it's okay for me. Like, I don't think it's fair as the partner to be like, well, you're not passionate enough. You know, like it right. just doesn't make any sense. That's not like, that's not your place to say. And why, I don't know. I just, and obviously, again, this is about the writing, right? Like, we have to create something between the two of them for them to like break up. We don't even really know, spoiler alert, what the hell their relationship is. But like, I guess stepping back a second and like whether it's fair or not, do we think it's true to Maggie's character, her saying that?
I kind of do.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I do think the writing of it, like, I do think Maggie would say that to someone.
Right. It's like she said the thing out loud that she shouldn't have. You know, it's like when you say the thought instead of just thinking it.
Like, I feel like it's a very Ellis thing to say.
Yes, very much so. And it's also a little, it makes you wonder, like, did she marry him because she loves him or because also she, like, deeply respected his work? I don't know. It's just weird. And then lightning strikes and it's all very dramatic. But I don't blame Winston for being pissed at her, I guess, is moving forward. That is like such a cruel thing to say.
Yeah, I agree. I forgot to say something about the Meredith Zola thing and thinking about Alice made me remember this. So I'm just going to pop back real fast. Meredith calls Zola extraordinary. Did you pick up on that? Yeah. And calls that out in her. And I thought, oh, that's a nice callback to like.
Yeah. Showing growth, but like generational growth, I feel like.
Yeah. Yes.
And that in how she's different, like she's literally changing her life for her daughter. And yeah. I don't think Alice would have done that.
No. And then like calling out how extraordinary her daughter is, like after her daughter had like said she doesn't want to be a doctor and like
yes
so anyway,
no, I think that's great. That's a great good callback. Let's talk a little bit about the Amelia Lucas thing.
Yeah,
it's very like reminiscent of like Meredith not wanting them to know she's a Gray, you know, like sort of like Legacy or Jackson and Avery. There seems to always be someone who has some sort of family legacy at this hospital and they try to avoid it, but you just can't. I think it is interesting that he thinks it's better for them to think he's sleeping with her than that he's related to her, which it just feels extreme to me. He also is very dramatic.
He is very dramatic.
Like, I'm skipping to the end here, but like him screaming at Simone about like him not being good in that operating room and then owning her, I'm saying owning as like a verb, her face, which is what he does. That really took me off guard. I remember thinking that their chemistry was really good, but like I was not sensing sexual tension in that moment.
Well, I think it was the sexual tension that had boiled over from episodes and episodes, and so he pulled an Owen, but like it's been building and building, and then he's like rage sexing, you know, which
he is rage sexing. That's a good point of view. I was surprised. I couldn't remember what, like, you know, because we know Simone is engaged but they don't, and she just says I can't, but she does not say why. Leaving,
we don't
know
yet, right?
No, I mean, we finished the season, no.
But right.
We don't know at all. And I thought it was good that they keep it open-ended. She says, I can't. And I think we're supposed to just be like, oh, she's not ready to, you know what I mean? But there's such a bigger reason behind that. Lucas is so dramatic.
Just wait for the second half of the season with him like at a barbecue drinking beer and like eyeing Simone the entire time. He's super dramatic.
I guess he's very Derek-like.
Oh my God, he's so Derek-like. He's such a shepherd. He's
such a shepherd.
And that's why he didn't want people to know he was a shepherd, because they're all really annoying. That's not true. I love Amelia. But she can have her moments. She can have her dramatic moments also. So
yeah, I did. I love the way she like just walked him in there and like made him announce it. Because I also would be like, I don't want my people to think I'm sleeping with my nephew, you know, or just in general, like sleeping with an intern.
Right.
She did the right thing. Absolutely.
How do we feel about, we didn't really touch on this a lot in the rounds, but just briefly, like, how do we feel about the Nick and Meredith thing, like where it stands? It's confusing.
Yeah, I totally get why Nick is pissed to get an email and say that she's moving to Boston. I'd be like, we just started like sort of dating again. What the fuck?
Also, and like, I don't, you think asked he would me have to said, like take this job here and move here.
Right. I don't think he would have told her not to go either. You know, I think he just would have liked to have been included. And who is it? Oh, Richard. Richard goes to Nick and he asks Nick, like, are you leaving too? You know, and he says, she's not easy, I know, but there is no one like her. And I was like, she's not that, like, is she that great? It was a weird way of him standing up for her, kind of.
She's that great. This place is really going to feel it when she leaves. Like, oh God. Yeah. Okay.
I would be so mad if the person I was seeing was like, oh, hey, in an email to my staff, I'm moving to Boston.
Yeah. And I felt like when she wrote that email, it was like they literally shot her writing the email. It took 20 seconds. And then she said, like, that's a huge email to write. I was like, ballsy to be like, I'm sending out this very intense email and I'm just like, I'm not going to proofread it. I'm not going to have anyone else go over it. And I'm just going to send it out.
Well, that's pretty much how the writers thought about Meredith leaving. Also, yeah. I think it's about the same amount of thought process went into that. And then they're just yelling during in the OR, which is also very like Derek and Mare used to kind of do that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else in this, like, I know we're not really talking about any of the storm patients, because it's kind of like at this point, a storm in Seattle is like not as dramatic as a ferry boat crash. You know, it just yep. feels like sometimes they throw these big extreme things in here. I did want to say we do learn, this wasn't in a round, but I want to talk. We did learn a little bit about each of the interns. Like we learned that Yasuda, she has that moment where she's like incredibly impressed by Teddy in the surgery mm-hmm. and says that like she wants to be her when she grows up. Thought that mm-hmm, was a great mm-hmm. little moment. We learned that Jules' dad sold weed under the table, like at a market. Like, so she had a kind of interesting childhood. And then we learned that Benson Kwan, I think that, yeah, he didn't get into medical school in the US, but he was valedictorian in high school. But in college, his mom got sick, his grades took a nosedive, and his mom ended up dying. So we're getting yep. like little bits of all of their, you know, like background sort of in, yes. in ways that doesn't feel as huge as it did when we learned about our original interns, but it's still like nice, I guess, to add more to those characters.
I would agree. There's one other thing that we start to see Teddy or like Owen tells Teddy to like try and become chief after Owen yes. wants to become chief again. And he's going to Richard, and someone, a listener, Nicholas, commented on our Patreon post. And I wanted to just read this because we talked yeah. about this last week. He says, I know you asked how Richard had the right to give Bailey her job back and allow her to open up the clinic. He still holds the title of chief medical officer of the Fox Foundation, or chief of chiefs title, which technically gives him the power to do so. It would have made more sense for Meredith to do that hire, but you know, the Grey's writers be tripping. So I think that also makes sense why Richard is the one looking for a new chief of surgery, because he is chief of chiefs. So Chief cleared that up. Thank yep. you, Nicholas. We appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you so much. So and I remember liking this idea of Teddy being chief.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then Owen can take over trauma again. Right.
Yeah. I also think, though, that Owen was a good chief, you know, but well, I guess minus the plane crash thing. But like I felt like he thrived in the paperwork and the managing, you know.
Yeah, I feel like Owen did fine as chief, if I remember correctly. But it does make sense that Richard is like, you don't have a medical license. Like, I can't allow you to be chief.
Right, exactly. So, and another random note I want to hit on is that Bailey names the clinic after her mom, the Elena Bailey really Clinic, nice. Which is great. We love Elena. Why do I have a note that says, sawing a man off, ?
Oh, what are they out of that chair?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sawing a man off. That sounds like kind of weirdly sexual.
I know, like in the Barbie movie, beaching off. Yeah. Yeah, it does sound a bit like that. I just was like, wow, they're using a saw.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's all I have, guys. I'm unimpressed.
Yeah. Want to do notes and trivia?
Let's do it. This episode's title originated from the song When I Get to the Border, originally sung by Richard and Linda Thompson.
It scored 3.13 million viewers.
Supposedly, it was filmed sometime around August 25th, 2022.
There you have it. The scenes taking place outside the Catherine Fox Foundation building in Boston were filmed at the California Market Center in Los Angeles.
This episode's title originated from the song Thunderstruck, originally sung by AC/DC.
Ugh. All I can ever think about is like workout, end of workout, like from that gym.
I think of chugging beer.
Oh, I think about like holding a weighted ball on a like a and doing. Oh God,
we did Thunderstruck at my. We did Thunderstruck at my wedding.
Oh, you did. I remember that. That's really funny. Okay, the episode scored 3.72 million viewers,
and it marks the 400th appearance of James Pickens Jr. as Richard Weber.
We love Richard. Okay, who do we want to give the Catherine Fox Award?
The Catherine Fox Award. Let's give it to. Maybe Bailey, because she opens the clinic. She gives Addison this van that Addison will save lives in. And she kind of like keeps it together enough to like get through that very hard moment.
And she also says no to being chief again. She like sets a boundary and she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't have the capacity for it. So
100%. It's Bailey. It's Miranda Bailey.
Great. Love it. Rating the episode.
I'm sorry. It's a 5.5.
Yeah, it's like a 5 for me. Like, why? These are not hitting the way I want them to hit, and I don't think they ever will again. It's really a shame.
Meredith's house lighting on fire should be so emotional.
And it was not. Also, did you, the last thing I will say about the episode that I thought was kind of funny was Chief was like, God, I hate this new OR board. They have like a different, they have like a yeah. technical, and I loved that he hated it. And but it made me miss the original whiteboard OR board. But I mean, I they had to get rid of it because it wouldn't be in a hospital like that anymore. It would be.
Well. Right. I do love the idea of him being like, in the olden days, we wrote on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
All right. Good stick board, around Chief. For post-op. We're going to talk just for a few minutes on Catherine and Tom. And thank you again for supporting us and for listening. And sorry, we're a little under the weather today. You know, we're just doing our best.
Yeah. We're still providing content. But just through a nasally toned voice. So, time of death is 15:13.
Beep.